Serving the universe from the Martian capital of the world, Willow, Alaska. This is Mushing, brought to you by First Paw Media. Let's hit the trail.
One of my favorite runs to do is on Mail Plane Day, which happens twice a week. We go to the mail shack and we pick up
By dog team. That's awesome. Yeah,
super fun. We can park right next to the mail shack. I can leave them there and run in and go grab my mail and then put the mail on the sled and head out. And sometimes we even bring mail to our neighbor, and that's always super fun. I really, really wanted to start delivering mail to people around the community, but I quickly realized that turning around can be an issue. And so haven't gotten to do that for everybody around here yet.
You are listening to Mushing on First Paw Media. Visit our website at mushing.com.
Today we're talking to Kenna and Aiden from Wayland's Way Dog Sledding in McCarthy, Alaska. We got a chance to sit down with them in their very cool cabin right outside of the Wrangell's St. Elias National Park. But before we do, here's what's new on mushing.com. We have an article about getting started in the sport. To add context to this, we went deep into the vaults and pulled out a beginning basics article from the Collins twins. Additionally, we released our July gear review featuring some pretty cool products, including the Jet Boil Flash. Now, let's jump into the episode.
Hello and welcome to Mushing. This is Robert, and we are in a very cool place right outside of Wrangell St. Elias National Park in McCarthy, Alaska. I am really excited to talk to Aiden and Kenna. What a cool setup here. I'm looking out their window right now at the Wrangell Mountain Range, I guess it is. Beautiful mountains, a beautiful spot. This is going to be a fun episode. Aiden and Kenna, welcome to the podcast. Kenna, can you do us a favor and briefly tell us who you are and what you're all about, please?
Yeah, my name is Kenna. I'm 24 years old, and Aiden and I have a dream to start our own kennel out here in Wrangell St. Elias. The country's beautiful, and we really want to explore it.
Okay. Aiden, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you're all about, please.
I'm 25. My dream growing up was to move to Alaska and live in a cabin in the woods. And I'm finally starting to make that happen. And what really made that possible was sled dogs. And so, yeah, we're trying to start a kennel out here and turn it into something that we can do as a lifestyle 24/7, 365.
Yes. So, Kenna, when my wife, Michelle, called up the Ma Johnson Hotel, the lady that answered the phone said, "Oh my God, you have to talk to Kenna. She is the only dog musher out here. You have to interview her when you guys come up." And for folks that are listening, Michelle and I drove up on a little bit of a road trip to McCarthy. We're recording this on the 4th of July weekend. I am very interested to hear about how you guys met. I heard that story last night. But Kenna, you do work at this kind of historic old hotel in McCarthy. Tell us a little bit about that. Tell us the flavor of McCarthy.
Yeah, McCarthy is really built on history. 1920s was a big copper boom town. And the Ma Johnson's Hotel is really cool because it's like a living museum. There's lots of artifacts in there, a lot of cool historical pictures. And it's just a really fun boutique hotel, and it's a nice day job.
Yeah, and I know that dog mushing played a role in this area. The Kennecott Mine, for folks that are listening, is just to our right a little bit, I guess, a few miles from here. That's a pretty big tourist attraction now. It was in operation until 1938, one of the biggest copper mines in the area for sure. And I went to the museum with Michelle yesterday, and there was a bunch of dog mushing pictures there. I know towards the end of the mine era, they were doing some transport with dogs back and forth. So this area is is deep in dog mushing for sure. Aiden, before we jump into mushing, you told us last night as we were sitting down for our dinner and listening to Blackwater Railroad, very famous Alaskan band here, you told us how you and Kenna met. Tell us a bit about that.
So we both got summer jobs here. I had been here for a couple weeks and I was doing a little bit of beaver trapping. And so I had caught a beaver and I was behind the employee house skinning it, which attracted a crowd of, you know, seasonal workers who had never been to Alaska. They wanted to see what was going on. And Kenna came out and I saw her and she was pretty cute. And I said, "Hey, do you want to go to Kennecott tomorrow?"
And that was it.
That was it.
Oh, my goodness. And here.
Love at first sight.
Here we are. Beaver guts and all.
Yep.
Love at first sight. You took her on your first date to, I don't know if that's cheesy or not, to go to a museum / tour. But hey, here you guys are engaged to be married at this very cool spot. For time reference, and we're going to go back in just a second, Aiden, how long ago was that?
That was in 2021.
Okay, so about four years ago, yeah, as we're recording this, and a lot's happened since then. I know you are from Wisconsin,
yep,
and you are from Arizona. Arizona, you don't think about having a lot of mushing history. Were you in the desert of Arizona or at Flagstaff?
Both. So I grew up in Sierra Vista, which is like 40 miles away from the border. And then I went to college in Flagstaff.
Okay. So. All right. So let's jump into this. Aiden, I'll have you start off here. Tell us how you got into mushing. I know you're from Wisconsin, so that's a big mushing mecca up there. But when was your first introduction?
Kenna was actually my first introduction.
Okay.
I don't know, probably 4 or 5 months after we started dating, she dropped out of college and on a whim went to northern Minnesota and was a handler for a winter. Meanwhile, I was living out here in McCarthy by myself, so very much in the wilderness, and I thought, man, dog mushing seems really cool, and this girl seems pretty cool to be doing it, and maybe like if she can do that, she can do that here. And so I flew down there and spent a week visiting her in Minnesota. And that was my introduction to it. So she took me out on the sled a couple times and I got to help hook up a couple dog teams and yeah.
Okay. And Kenna, I know that you started there at a kennel just north of Duluth, more of a tour type kennel, right? And then later on, you obviously came up to Alaska and did some tours as well. Lead us up to that.
Yeah. So I made the decision to move to Minnesota because I really wanted to live in Alaska, but being from Arizona, I thought I would perish in the elements during winter. So thought I better try the Midwest first. And that was actually my most intense winter conditions that I've had. It was super windy all the time, really cold. We got like 17 feet of snow. It was a lot. But then I moved here full time, spent a winter out here and just really missed working with sled dogs. So then the following summer, I went to Skagway to work for Alaska Icefield Expeditions, where we do the glacier tours. And that was a really great learning experience for me. And that was really when I was like, okay, I could start my own kennel. Yeah. And after that, I finally convinced Aiden to be a handler. And then we worked for Katie Joe and Jeff Dieter for a winter. And during that winter, I was running, well, I wasn't running, but I stayed in contact with Will Trzynski. I had some of his dogs on the glacier, and turns out Will was downsizing. So then we were like, yeah, let's adopt 9 dogs.
Okay, yeah. And that's how a lot of folks do it for sure, is you spend a little bit of time getting your feet wet in the tour world or that type of experience, and then you jump in with 2 feet and get started. So, Aiden, as Kenna was building up, thinking about this dream that you guys were going to have, were you prepping the area we're in right now? We're going to describe that in a second, or were you doing something else? You mentioned in a previous episode that you're a carpenter.
Right, so I was living out here just trying to make it possible to be out here doing whatever jobs I could find. You know, it's, we're very remote. We don't have much of an economy during the winter time. So we kind of have to make our whole annual income in 3 or 4 months. And so I was just doing that out here, just like, and I was happy to be out here, happy to be in the wilderness. It kind of the whole time was like, we got to get dogs. We got to get dogs. And I was like, sounds really cool, but how is that possible? That sounds like really expensive. We don't own land. Like what? So many things can go wrong. So I took a little convincing. And what really convinced me is when we went and spent a winter with Katie and Jeff, and I saw, no, this is actually possible. And not only is McCarthy a cool place to do that, but it'll work, I think. Like, we'll be able to have our own tour business someday where we can make an income with the dogs so that we can spend our whole life around the dogs, so that I don't have to go have a day job being a carpenter. I don't have to, you know, worry about that. It's possible out here that we can do dogs year round all the time.
I am going to try to set the stage for this for our listeners and give some pinpoints on the map. So we live in Willow. So for folks that know about Willow, the start of the restart of the Iditarod, we're about 70 miles north of Anchorage. I think we're about 350-ish miles from Anchorage right here. We are about 100 miles from the Richardson Highway. And for Mushing fans, you know that landmark. That is where they run the Copper Basin 300 in that area. So thinking about that on the map. We're about, 160 or 70 miles from Valdez, and we are 90 miles, which I guess 70 or so of that is a dirt road off of the highway. The closest little town from McCarthy would be Chitna, and then the closest bigger town would be Valdez, right?
Valdez or Glen Allen.
Valdez or Glen Allen. So what I am saying, guys, is we are out there. We are out there deep in the wilderness. I think a lot of people that want to be mushers think about this lifestyle. But many, especially in today's world, as you mentioned, Aiden, you have to have a way to make a living, whether it's a carpenter or a hotel clerk, I guess you are, or tour operator or whatever. You have to have a way to pay for your dog food for sure. And living out here this far, I would imagine you guys have a very difficult lifestyle in where we are at. And in McCarthy, we were there on the 4th of July. I think, Kenna, you said that was the busiest day of the year. Yeah, we were staying in the hotel that you worked at, and it was going strong till 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning. So, yeah, it's a booming little place. But in the winter, there's nothing going on, right?
Nothing. Everything's closed. Where you guys were, you could sit there all day and maybe see two people drive by.
Yep. So in McCarthy, we go over a bridge that they have a key to that they pay several hundred dollars a year for to get over this private bridge. You take a couple of mile drive down this dirt road, and then you have to park your truck at the end of it, and you have to hike in, I guess, a half a mile or so to your place. And as we arrived, Michelle and I arrived, a cool little cabin, just a little 12-dog team, and then a wannabe lab mix sled dog. So a very small team, but a very cool place overlooking a beautiful lake, overlooking the Wrangells to all around us on three sides. A very cool place. Lots and lots of miles to run here. It is truly the mushing paradise, romanticism of dog mushing back in the old days for sure. So I have to ask, and we're going to go with Aiden here. So you got your feet wet in a little bit of the tour business with Katie, Joe, and Jeff. You got your feet wet with Katie, Joe, and Jeff with Black Spruce dog mushing. And moved up here to really make it happen. I know that you wanted to live here, Aiden, but man, this is a heck of a lifestyle. How difficult is it to just do everything mushing living out here?
You know, it's definitely a lot more difficult, but at this point, I don't even really notice. It's become normal. But yeah, I mean, you know, groceries, say like we can't just go to the grocery store if we need an onion. Like, we have to plan everything ahead. We try to go to town for trips every 2 to 3 months, and we spend quite a bit of time preparing for that, making lists, very, very detailed lists, so we don't forget anything. You know, we'll go to Costco and literally fill up the truck with groceries, fill up the back with dog food, go to Home Depot, get any supplies you need like that. We pack the truck full, and you get a lot of funny looks in Anchorage driving around with the truck packed to the ceiling. But it's definitely that adds a challenge to it. And then during the winter time, it's a little bit more difficult because we're concerned about the road conditions. The road's not always drivable, so we kind of might have to wait a couple weeks to go to town if we need to. Fuel is another thing. You can buy it out here, but it's very expensive, so we try to haul our own in from town. So pretty much everything that we need out here, we have to think ahead to get it out, which is different than how most people live. But at this point, it just feels normal to us. And for me, it's totally worth it to be surrounded by this country and to have the freedom to go and explore it. It's 100% worth it.
So we're going to talk about that mushing dream in just a second. But Kenna, you had mentioned that you work here at the hotel and you're a carpenter, Aiden. I would imagine that you talked about that huge haul that you guys go get in Fairbanks or wherever. I would imagine that you guys are spending almost your entire year's wages in just a couple of hauls, right?
Yeah.
It goes fast.
How does that feel where you worked all year and then it's all spent at Costco or Home Depot or whatever?
In a way it sucks, but in a way it's also kind of nice because when you live out here, that money in the bank is kind of useless. Like, it's not, you know, whereas food in the pantry out here is a lot more valuable. Having the supplies you need to get through the winter is a lot more valuable than just having money sitting in a bank that you can't really access.
Okay. All right. So
I have a couple of questions. So you guys described the lifestyle and getting the supplies and things like that. But describe the cabin. This is a dry cabin. And a lot of people that do dog mushing, especially in the lower 48, they have no concept of that.
Yep. So dry cabin, completely off grid here. We haul our water from a spring that the community uses. So in the wintertime, we'll use the snow machine or the dogs. In the summer, we'll use the truck to actually drive down that trail that you guys walked on. We'd have no indoor bathroom, no running water sink. You know, we have an igloo cooler full of water and for power, we have a generator, which actually just crapped out this morning. So I've got to figure that out. We've got a couple batteries that run our lights and then a couple little power pack things that we use to like charge our phone and stuff. So yeah, we're very independent. But I think that feels good. It feels good to me to know that I'm not reliant on like a power company. If my power goes out, I can fix it. If you live in town and your power goes out,
You have to wait.
You just sit there and twiddle your thumbs. Well, I get to actually do something about it, and it feels good.
And we could not go without saying that Starlink has literally changed the world.
Definitely.
And with you guys out here, I would imagine, I saw the dish out here, I would imagine that you guys can not only sit down and watch Netflix on your generators, of course, but you can stay in touch with the world, right?
Yep. We got Starlink specifically when we decided to try and start a tour business for being able to do that. So when we need internet, we start the generator and run the Starlink. It works amazing. We do have cell service out here, which works well in the winter, but in the summer we get a big influx of people and it kind of overloads the one cell tower. So during the summer where we are, we're not able to use our phones that much.
All right, guys. So we have done a lot of build up to this on this episode so far. So we're going to jump in and talk all about the dogs. We're going to go with Kenna here. We mentioned, Kenna, that you have 12 dogs here. And one Labrador mix that thinks that they want to be a sled dog. It's currently crashed out here on the couch with me. But Kenna, tell us a bit about your dogs. You had mentioned that you got some dogs from a musher or two. Tell us about who you have.
Yeah, most of our kennel comes from Will Trzynski in Two Rivers. That's how we got started. A couple of those dogs have Martin Boozer lines. And Marnie, I think, comes from the Jovnys.
That's just Matt Failer.
No, that's
just Jovi.
Jovi. and then we also have a couple of dogs from Katie Joe and Jeff Dieter, and also a couple dogs from Olivia Shank.
Okay. So, a lot of bloodlines spread out, with such a small kennel. And we talked about in a previous episode that, a good friend of mine, his name is Dave Shear, said that you can go anywhere in Alaska with a team of 9 dogs. We're going to talk about an adventure that Aiden has planned in the future. But with 12 dogs and kind of interspersed with all of these different lines, describe your dogs themselves. Are they big? Are they small? Are they male? Are they female? Give us an idea.
Yeah, our biggest dog is named Pop-Tart, and he's probably 85, 90 pounds.
At least.
He's so big. And his sister is also pretty big, but a little bit smaller than him. So we have a couple big dogs and then a couple really small females. So we got a pretty good mix and lots of personality. Yeah, one of our dogs, Capone, he comes from Katie, Joe, and Jeff. He's just a little weirdo and he makes me so happy.
Yeah. So you guys have a background in tourism. Tour businesses where it's constantly go, go, go with different people every day. Definitely a different experience from what you're doing right now. Aiden said at some point that you may use your dogs for what they were intended to do, to go get water and haul supplies and all of that. So we're going to talk about adventures in a minute, but can you guys, you go first. I want you to do the dog side and we're going to have Aiden do the support side. So what does a day in the life look like with your dogs here in McCarthy?
Yeah, in the wintertime, I wake up and go out and feed the dogs a nice beef and kibble soup. And then I come back in, let them digest, and then I'll go outside and booty them and we'll hit the trails. One of my favorite runs to do is on mail plane day, which happens twice a week. We go to the mail shack. And we pick up
by dog team.
By dog team.
That's awesome.
Yeah, super fun. We can park right next to the mail shack. I can leave them there and run in and go grab my mail and then put the mail on the sled and head out. And sometimes we even bring mail to our neighbor. And that's always super fun. I really, really wanted to start delivering mail to people around the community, but I quickly realized that turning around can be an issue. And so haven't gotten to do that for everybody around here yet, but.
So going into town, doing chores, yep. Right? What's a run look like? How often are you guys running? What does that look like in terms of miles? I know that can change every day, but what's a typical day on the sled look like?
Yeah, well, first of all, our first hurdle is getting through a driveway. That is a super fun trail, has lots of twists and turns and ups and downs. Once we're past that, we can hit the trails and, you know, a run to Kennecott and back is 15 miles and that's a good 2-hour day. We typically like to run every other day, sometimes every day if we're doing those shorter runs. I think our longest run this year was a little over 50 miles and we weren't necessarily training for races. We're not doing that just yet. So we're really exploring the country. So that means we go on a lot of squirrely trails that have been closed for years that we just opened up. It's pretty technical sled driving.
I can imagine. Yeah. And with this small of a kennel, what's a team look like? Is it 4? Is it 6? Is it 12?
It depends. You know, sometimes dogs get injuries or maybe they're not eating that great and they're staying home. I would say our average team size is about 8.
So a good 8 dog team.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And you're doing all sorts of stuff in terms of runs. And we're going to do that with Aiden here. Aiden, let's switch gears for that. Before we talk about the trails and all of that around, Are you having to break trail on snow machine or anything like that? Or give us the logistics of running a sled dog team from here.
Yes and no. So we have kind of the community trails, I guess, that everybody else uses. So like up to Kennecott, around McCarthy, kind of the close area to us. And those trails just get naturally broken in by the people who live out here traveling them. If we want to go out farther, a lot of times we're breaking our own trail. Sometimes we can connect. There is one other musher out here. We can connect with them. We can connect with snow machiners. And they can be like, hey, we went up here last week. There's a trail in there. And then we might go run it. But if we have a specific place that we want to go to, usually what happens is I'll go out in the snow machine a couple days beforehand, put a trail in, scope it out, make sure it's runnable with a dog team. And then Kenna will take the dogs up there.
And what kind of snow machine are you using?
I have a 2017 Tundra.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So not a big beast of a machine. I would imagine the Tundra is a little bit easier to handle than like an Expedition or a Wide Track or anything like that.
Yep. It's a good middle of the road machine.
Yep. So, Aiden, you were showing me a video last night of a trip that you did. I guess it was up on a glacier.
Kind of.
Yeah. Tell us about that trip and describe that for folks that don't have any idea what that's like.
So that was the big end of the year trip we did to cap our season off. We were hoping to do a race, but it didn't work out. So we decided, hey, let's go spend a week in the park and go these places that we want to go. So we ran, I think, about 30 miles out to a public use cabin out here and kind of turned that into our base camp. And then we spent 3 or 4 days going up different drainages. So we went up one drainage one day. I guess most of the drainages out here have a glacier at the top of them, but that one we didn't actually get all the way up to the glacier. And then we went all the way up the Nazina River, all the way up to the Nazina Glacier. And the Nazina Glacier is pretty cool because it's actually still kind of advancing. So there's a lake at the base of it with these huge icebergs that float around, and then they get locked in place when it freezes in the winter. And there's all kinds of cool ice formations, like the tunnel that you saw in the video. And so we ran up there and then spent a little bit of time just running through these huge blocks of ice and tunnels of ice. And that was super cool. And then the last day we ran up the Chittistone, and we didn't make it too far up that valley, but that's a really cool valley because it's straight cliff walls on either side.
Wow.
It's basically a canyon.
Awesome. And I know we're going to talk about a big trip that you have in the making. We don't know when that's going to be. I'm looking forward to hearing about two trips, actually. One kind of northeast, I guess, and another one would be southeast. But Kenna, very close to the national park here, Wrangell-St. Elias National Park, one of the larger national parks in the park system here in the U.S. It goes from this area all the way down into southeast Alaska. Lots and lots of mountains, lots and lots of glaciers. And when I say mountains, these are some of the tallest mountains in the United States. You have Mount Wrangell and Blackburn and Elias and all these that are really tall mountains. But let's talk a little bit about the park. The park is just next to us. Is there any special conditions to run in the park? I know that you may not ever see anybody, but do you guys need permits or anything like that? Or can you just hook up and go?
We can just hook up and go. You know, dog mushing is a traditional method of transport, so we are allowed to do that within the national park. Also, there's hardly anybody here in the wintertime. The Park Service doesn't stay year round. So
you can just go. And that's a very cool thing because, in today's world, trails are so moderated, you know, especially down in South Central. They're either moderated by the borough or the club or whatever. And, you know, you got to deal with all of that. But up here, you guys are just doing your thing and you can go pretty much anywhere you want. I guess you literally, Kenna, you could jump on one of these rivers and go all the way to the ocean one way, or you could go the other way and you could go up until the river ended, right?
Yep.
Hundreds and hundreds of miles.
Yeah.
That is so awesome. So when you guys go out, Is one of you favored to the dog team than the other? Is somebody always on the sled, or do you guys do 50-50, or how does that work, Kenna?
Well, this is our first season having our own dog team, so we only have one dog sled.
Okay.
It's usually me driving the dog sled, and Aiden is snow machine support. But we finally are getting a second sled, so we'll both be able to have a dog team.
Much smaller, unless you guys get other dogs, a much smaller team. You had mentioned that your sweet spot is 8. What would you think about, like a 4 or 6 dog team?
Yeah.
You'd take everybody.
Yeah, we would take everybody, but I think it would be so worth it to be able to run together.
Yeah, yeah. So let's switch over to you, Aiden. When you guys are going out on a run, and for perspective, when we go out on a run, we're typically 30 or 40 miles from home, which means 30 or 40 miles from civilization. I mean, if worse comes to worse, I can call Michelle and say, hey, this is what happened. I broke my arm and I can be at the emergency room in a half an hour, right? So what does that look like for you, Aiden, when you're packing up to go somewhere? Are you guys planning for the absolute worst? And what does that look like for you?
We try to plan for the absolute worst. Yeah, we always bring supplies in case we get stuck out there or in case something bad happens. Always especially thinking about water, like what happens if I get wet and how do I get warm and dry if I get wet. So always have a dry bag with a spare change of clothes in the sled. Always on me, I carry road flares. Super easy way to start a fire really quick. And if something did happen, you know, it's nice. We do have an inReach, and we try to make friends with bush pilots who live out here. So maybe call them and, you know, get them to fly you out. It's not like we're completely alone. You just have to have friends in the right places.
So speaking of that, have you guys had a really gone sideways trip on a dog team where something major has happened and you had to do something, whatever that is?
Not yet on a dog team. I did have a trip with a jet boat that I got stuck out for 3 days.
Wow.
A friend had a jet boat and was like, hey, let's try to take it up this river. And going up the river was very easy because, you know, you're kind of looking up an incline so you can read the river and see where you're going. And if you go the wrong way, the current will just pull you back downriver and you can go a different way. Well, we got upriver, and then we turn around to go back, and now you're kind of going downhill, so you can't really see what's coming. And if you make a wrong turn into a channel that's too narrow and get grounded, you can't back up. And so we made it upriver in a couple hours, and it took us 3 days to get like halfway back downriver, and then we ran out of food and ended up having to be flown out.
Whoa. Was that expensive?
Not too bad. I didn't have to pay for it. Luckily, my buddy took the bill for that.
And what happened with the boat?
The boat stayed out there all summer, and then over winter, they took some machines and pulled it back home.
So guys listening, this is an extreme environment, extreme lifestyle for sure. So I would like to hear about a couple of trips, expeditions that you guys have planned out. And both of you guys feel free to jump in here. We were talking about those last night. So let's talk about the big one first. You talked about going from here over the ice field. And I want you to describe that for folks that are listening in just a second. But lay that trip out for us. What does that look like? How much time is that? What does it entail?
So the big dream for me is to get from McCarthy to Nevesna. And that's definitely down the road for us. There's a lot of things I feel like we need to learn to be able to do that. But it has been done before, right? People used to do that with dogs out here. Any way you want to get over the wrangles here, it's not going to be easy. You're either going up a very narrow canyon that probably has a lot of open water, or you've got to go up on the ice and over the mountains. So probably what that would look like for us, we would run up the river to the base of the glacier. The base of the glacier is a challenging spot because there's a lot of moraines, up and down, hilly, lots of crevasses. So you have to get up onto the glacier somehow. Once you're up on the glacier, it's fairly smooth sailing as long as you're going the right time of year and you have a good snowpack up and over the pass. Then you drop back down and you have to find a way off of the glacier. Again, got to get through, you know, crevasse fields, moraine, hilly areas. And then once you're off, you get on the river and you can go all the way to Shoshana, I guess. And then from Shoshana, there's a trail that goes to Nabesna.
So, Kenna, that's a dream of Aiden's. Right now, you are the musher, right? You're the main musher, if we say. How does this fit with you? Is this something you want to do?
It is something that I want to do. I know that that is a few years away for us, at least. So I definitely need to hone in on my skills and be truly prepared for that. But I do think it would be really awesome.
And you want to run Iditarod.
We're
both committed to getting her to run Iditarod before we go do expeditions out here.
So put a feather in that cap. I'm going to come back to that in just a second. But I want to talk about your second trip that you told me about last night. Okay. When you said you wanted to, and for folks that are listening that hear this little tap, 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 we do have a sled dog here in our cabin with us today here in McCarthy. So the audio isn't perfect, but this is truly a team and trail type interview. Michelle is sitting beside me here. The sled dog is sitting to my right, and Kenna and Aiden are right here next to us. So we don't do a lot of in-person interviews anymore unless we're at an event. So this is very cool. And there is some 7 degrees of separation, if you will, Kenna. Last year on our Team and Trail tour, we interviewed Linda Newman with Points Unknown. And I know that you got your tour start there, right?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my first introduction into dog mushing.
Wow, that is cool. And it's interesting how everything is such a small world. Is everybody knows everybody, and that is thousands of miles from here, at least 2,000 miles from where we sit right now. So let's talk about your second trip before we talk about Iditarod. Aiden, you showed me on the map yesterday over at the bar. You said, this is my big dream. This is a couple of week long trip from here down to the coast.
Yes.
Describe this trip.
So still figuring out the exact route, but the route that I have in mind, you run 60 to 80 miles up a very wide glacial river. This is up to 2 miles wide in some places. It's actually one of the driest places in Alaska because it's in a snow shadow from the mountains. And then you would kind of turn off and head up a glacier and get up onto the Bagley Ice Field, which I believe is at about 3,000 or 4,000 feet of elevation. One of the biggest pieces of ice in the world, other than the North and South Pole. So then you would take that, going, I guess, west and find another glacier to drop down to the coast on. And then once you get down onto the coast, you're in a whole different world, right? It's a completely different environment there. The snow conditions are different. The trees are different. Whole different world. The other option, and what they used to do, the native people who lived out here, they would use the Copper River. So they would travel down the Copper River to where Cordova is now, basically. That's another dream of mine, to get to the coast. But the Copper is a big, scary river, and it is only possible to do that for a very short window of time. So I would kind of rather go up over the ice field. That has its whole new set of dangers, but I feel like I can face those better than I can face falling through the ice.
I have rafted the Copper from Chitna to Cordova. And rafting, it's a big deal. I think it took us 5 days
yep.
to do it as a raft trip with a group from UAA. But this trip over the ice field, a couple of weeks?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think we could necessarily do it with the kind of dogs that we have now. We would have to do some breedings to try and get more of a dog that's designed to do that kind of running. Whether or not we could do it without resupply, I don't know. People used to do it, right? People used to do that kind of stuff. But, you know, I feel like the dogs nowadays eat a lot more food.
Yeah.
The old dogs have very slow metabolisms, right? They evolved for thousands of years to not need a lot of food. And so that's a big deal. We would need dogs that don't need a lot of food or special care, that, you know, they can just exist out there.
Yeah. Right?
The other option would be to have airdrops,
yep.
which I'm not opposed to that, you know, dropping a couple caches of supplies out there before we head out.
I was thinking as you were saying that about the airdrops, we watched a documentary from Will Steger that went over Antarctica. He was not doing it by dog team. They were kind of skiing across, and they did at very similar terrain. They were just doing their drops on airdrop. And you were saying earlier, Aiden, that you have a lot of friends in literal high places, a lot of pilot friends and all that. So that logistic is relatively easy to figure out, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he brought up a very good point about the difference between the dogs that used to do freighting and overland expeditions like you're describing.
Yep.
One of the guys, Henderson with the Malamutes.
Joe Henderson.
He does a lot of that kind of stuff. He uses Malamutes. But the point that you guys brought up, though, that I think a lot of people don't realize is the nutrition and what the dog's needs are is significantly different than it was even 50 years ago. Yeah. Dogs that started Iditarod in 73, 74, 75 are completely different than the dogs that are running it now. And that's a big point that you brought up.
Totally different. I mean, most of the mushing scene is focused on racing. And that's great. Nothing wrong with that. Like, I want to do that too. But my big interest is, like, to do what people used to do with dogs, because it seems so crazy nowadays to, like, say, hey, we want to go across the mountains to Nebezna. People used to do that. But nowadays, I can't, it's hard. Like, I'm working on figuring out how to even make that possible now. Whereas, you know, back in the day, the old timers, that's what dog mushing was. It was like, yeah, we've got a ton of supplies we've got to bring from here to this gold boom town. Because we're going to do it and they're going to pay us. We're going to make money doing that. Or we're going to haul mail. They used to haul mail to McCarthy from Canada up the White River and over Scoli Pass. And it's like, you know, nowadays to find or build a team that can do that is very rare.
So let's jump into that before we get into the racing. Kenna, what does that dog look like for you guys? Is it one of these big freighting dogs like, for folks that are listening, that looks like maybe like a big husky Malamute type dog, because your dogs are relatively small right now. What does this dog look like for you in the future, and how does that fit into your plans?
Yeah, I think we're still trying to decide if we want to go the Malamute way. I have a special place in my heart for Alaskan Huskies. I really love them. I love their personalities and their drive. And Aiden is the one who's more into the traditional style dogs, but I think that we can have a sort of hybrid that has kind of the body type and the determination of those Malamutes breaking trails, but the personality of the Alaskan Huskies.
Yep. As they say, I was a Siberian Husky guy for a long time. As they say with Alaskans, it's tough to go back. Yeah. To something else, whether it be Siberians or Malamutes or whatever. So let's talk a little bit about racing. I know that you guys have run only one race, the T-Dog 200, in its early days. We've talked a lot on this podcast about it being one of the coolest race formats, not only in Alaska, but probably in the United States. We had Tekla. We had Tekla on... right when they started doing that. So before the iteration it is now. But racing is a whole different animal. What does that look like? You said you wanted to do Iditarod. How does that look? What is the timeline? How are you going to get there?
Yeah, I'm hoping to run it in 5 to 7 years.
Okay.
You know, we have to grow our kennel a little bit before we can seriously start training and preparing for that. I just really like the racing community. It's kind of you know, people who have hobbies, they go to conventions. It's like that. You learn a lot from other people and it's just fun. I like racing and I like the culture of it. I don't think I'm going to aim for being competitive. It's kind of like this goal that I have. And once I accomplish it, I will hopefully feel fulfilled and not want to run it every year. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Because I do eventually want to get into the expeditions.
And when you talk about it's going to take time and there's a lot of logistics there. And I'm thinking as we're talking about people that live a similar lifestyle to you guys. You had mentioned that you got your sled from Brent Sass. He's sort of retired now, I guess, but he had a very similar lifestyle to you guys. He parked at the end of the road and had to walk in a couple of miles and all of that way north of here. And Jesse Holmes, very similar situation out on the Alaska Highway, a little bit closer to civilization, I guess, than you guys. But it's possible, isn't it, Kenna?
Yeah, it is possible. And, you know, I think it makes it all that more worthwhile.
Yeah.
To just take a couple extra steps and do a little bit extra work. But, boy, does it feel really fulfilling.
So 2030 is, oh, my goodness.
You'll still be young and hungry. Yeah,
I don't know how old I will be, but I hope to do Iditarod before then. I say all the time that the oldest rookie was something like 74. So I still have about 20 years before I'm the oldest rookie, but that's a good goal to have, you know, 2030-ish,
yeah.
Right? Is that what you're thinking about?
2030-ish.
Okay, yes. I love it. All right, guys, we're about finished with our episode. We're going to leave with some closing remarks here. Aiden, we're going to go with you first. We've talked about a lot of stuff. We've talked about living here and this lifestyle and this community that you have in McCarthy and your trips and all of that. If you could leave with either a story or a piece of advice to folks that are listening out there that have big dreams, whatever they are, whether it be running a 5K or one day running Iditarod, you said in your Q&A episode is take your dreams and go after them, right? What do you want to leave our listeners with today?
Yeah, don't hold yourself back. When I first moved to Alaska, right, it was always my dream to live in a place like this, to live in a cabin in the wilderness. But it took me a while to convince myself that that was possible. I spent years working in Fairbanks, living in a normal house, trying to spend all my free time to go out trapping, to go out to do the stuff that I wanted to do. And I couldn't figure out, like, how do I make this possible? Just go. Like, at the end of the day, I quit my job. I found a job out here online on a whim, came out here, and ever since then, it's worked out. And so that was the best decision I ever made, was to say, this is my dream. And instead of sitting here, not really knowing how to make that possible, still trying to fit in with how you're supposed to live your life. And I finally just said, I don't want to do that. And I just went for it. And it's
paying off.
It's paying off. My life has been so much better since then.
Okay.
So just go for it.
Just go for it. Kenna, what's your parting advice?
I think it's really important to take a step back and see all that you've accomplished. You know, when you're always looking ahead at all of the stuff that you want to do, it can feel really overwhelming and maybe even discouraging. But if you look back and you're like, okay, well, a few years ago I was here and I've grown this much, like, it is possible. I just need to stay focused and take it one step at a time.
Okay, one step at a time.
I love it.
Yep. So, guys, either one of you with this, tell us about your, where can folks find out more about you? Are you on Facebook? Are you on Instagram? Do you have a website? Where can folks go to learn more about you guys, either one of you?
Yeah, we have Facebook, Instagram, and a website. We are called Waylon's Way Dog Sledding. That's our Instagram handle and also our Facebook. And then waylonswaydogsledding.com is our website.
Michelle?
Okay, yeah. We have to do a postscript because Robert forgot to ask you guys What is Wayland's Way?
Yes. Yeah. Let's go with that. Before we end, we're going to have to go back. Tell us about Wayland's Way. What is the deal with the name?
So Wayland's Way is named after our dog, Waylon, who is the lab boxer border collie mix that we have. He was the first dog that we got together out here, kind of on a whim. Kenna saw some pictures on Facebook of puppies and was like, we should get a puppy. And I was like, I don't know. That's a lot of responsibility. She convinced me to go look at the puppies. And literally, as soon as we turned in the drive, we saw them. And I was like, my heart melted. So we got Waylon. And Waylon spent a lot of time out here with us just exploring the wilderness. He climbed Fireweed Mountain with me a couple times, did hikes with me. He was our companion in the wintertime, our first winter out here together when we didn't have many friends and we were kind of lonely. And then when we got into sled dogs, like, Waylon just rolled with it. He's not a sled dog, doesn't look like one, but he thinks he is one now. And he is literally the most excited, most energetic dog that we have on our team. He might only be able to run 2 or 3 miles, but that's because he's pulling so hard that he wears himself out. Like, his attitude towards life, towards what he does and what he wants to do, is just so, what's the word?
Inspiring.
Inspiring, contagious.
Okay.
And so when we were looking for a name, we kind of wanted to follow that. We wanted to say, hey, it doesn't matter what you are or where you come from. You know, he's not a real sled dog, but that doesn't matter. What matters in life is how you approach what you're doing and the attitude that you have towards it. And that's what we wanted our kennel to reflect.
Gotcha. That's why we named it after him. All right, guys.
He is the consummate cheerleader.
Yep. Guys, we are talking right here in McCarthy, Alaska, to Aiden Warner and Kenna Connolly. Beautiful place out here. Musher's dream for sure. Just the landscape. The landscape alone. I don't know about the lifestyle. It's a hearty deal. But the landscape alone is beautiful. So thank you very much for joining us today. And guys, make sure you check out all of them on social. And if you have questions about their lifestyle, I'm sure that they would love to reach out. As they say, hit me up in the DMs, right, Kenna?
Exactly that.
All right, guys. Thank you very much. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.
Thanks so much for listening to Mushing. I am Robert Forto. We will have a transcript of this episode up shortly, as well as our top 10 highlights. To get this and other subscriber-only features, please consider joining Mushing Plus.
Are you a fan of the great outdoors? Do you enjoy the thrill of speed and adventure? Then listen up. Introducing Mushing, your ultimate guide to the exciting world of dog-powered sports and mushing. Whether you're a seasoned musher or just starting out, Mushing has got you covered. Get ready to immerse yourself in captivating stories of incredible sled dog races, expert training tips from seasoned professionals, and gear reviews to help you make the right choices for your team. From the breathtaking landscapes of Alaska to the snowy trails of Scandinavia, Mushing takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of dog-powered sports. Don't miss out on the latest issue, packed with exclusive interviews with top mushers, in-depth articles on sled dog nutrition, and stunning photography that will transport you to the heart of the action. So whether you're dreaming of competing in the Iditarod or simply want to learn more about this incredible sport, Mushing is your go-to resource. Subscribe now and get ready to unleash your passion for mushing. Visit our website at mushing.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. Mushing, where the spirit of adventure meets the power of the pack.